Let's turn now to our regular series of conversations with members of the Massachusetts Congressional Delegation. Congressman Richard Neal comes from Springfield. He represents the 1st District in Western Massachusetts, and he's the Dean of New England's Congressional Delegation. And Congressman Neal, welcome back to Radio Boston. It's great to have you back.
Delighted to be with you, Anthony.
I'd love to start with casino gambling because we've been talking about this endless feud here in Boston between Steve Wynn and Mayor Walsh. You represent Springfield, served as its mayor, and that's where MGM has scaled back its casino design, but it's moving forward. Are you still pretty sanguine about casino gambling in Massachusetts?
I think that given what has happened in Connecticut, which is not far from Springfield, within an hour's drive, you have two casinos. So there is the question of revenue from people from Western and Central Massachusetts who drive to those casinos. But the thing I always worry about is that you can gamble your way to prosperity, and you never want it to become, in my judgment, a substitute for real economic development. So there are a number, I think, of competing interests here that are at play, and the public in this instance opted for the casino.
And we continue to move bravely into this new world of casinos across Massachusetts. So let me move on to some business in Washington that I want to ask you about. And one of the big issues this week is gun control, particularly in light of the tragic mass shooting last week in Oregon. This week, Senate Democrats are rolling out legislation that would ban gun sales without background checks. What do you think? Is that enough to prevent future mass shootings? What's your view on what has to happen?
Well, I think the conversation always needs to include the suggestion that there is no effort that's being made to interfere with legitimate sportsmen and hunters. But there ought to be the minimal consideration of doing background checks, as the Senate legislation would conclude, on individuals who seek to have a gun. And I think that when you have a margin of 93% of the American people to 7% of the American people are okay with mental health background checks, it strikes me as being a no-brainer.
I want to ask you about the gun industry. Smith & Wesson, of course, is based in Springfield. What kind of responsibility falls to gun makers here in this debate? What's your view on that?
Well, I think what's happened with the gun makers, and in conversations I've had with Smith & Wesson over the years, I think that they understand the role of the background check for the individual. So I think in that instance, their sales have always been, in those moments, above board. I do think that guns can fall into the wrong hands, and we need to be mindful of that. And I don't understand the intransigence of some of those here in Congress who oppose the idea of a background check or a registration.
Well, I guess the intransigence is explained in some way, anyway, by the fact that the NRA has a very tight lock on this issue. Gun control efforts failed following that terrible massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. Are you at all confident that you and your colleagues will get anything done on gun control this time around?
Well, I've always favored it, but I am, in this moment, as you discuss it with me, I am not optimistic. I think the resistance here to any sort of gun measure is obvious to all. The NRA has used the arguments over the long time that I've been here that any legislation that addresses the issue of gun control is but a opportunity to get the nose under the tent to take away people's guns. And they've used that argument time and again. And my suggestion is there, again, as I emphasized earlier, nobody is talking about taking the guns away from the sportsman or the hunter.
Let me ask you about the race to be the next Speaker of the House following John Boehner's announcement last month that he's resigning from Congress at the end of October. So his resignation was hailed as a big victory by his conservative critics, and the race seems to be between Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, with possible challenges from Jason Chaffetz of Utah and Dan Webster of Florida. What's your view on this race, and what does it mean for House Democrats like you?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to point out that John Boehner was an old friend. Even members of the Massachusetts delegation would tell you, fairly easy to get along with, very pleasant. And at a time in his career, he was even deemed a moderate. And over the last few years, like much the rest of the Republican Party, he has steadily moved right. And the idea that he had to resign because he wasn't conservative enough tells you, I think, about the chaos that currently engulfs the Republican Party here in Washington. There is probably a core of anywhere from 41 to 48, really hardcore, by the way, members of Congress who haven't served for a long time, made a series of promises back home that they could not have hoped to fulfill and then blamed it on Boehner. So for them to promise that they could have a more vigorous or more confrontational party, I think flies in the face of the reality of their numbers. And I would suggest this to you, Anthony, which I think is fair. They ought to put up their candidate, get the 45 or 50 votes that that candidate will get, and then leave it alone so that we can get on to governing.
Mm. Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I'm just curious if you think that this dynamic changes at all, because it seems like this dynamic is just going to remain, if anything, become even more entrenched.
I will confidently predict that Kevin McCarthy's problems in 2 months will be the same as John Boehner's problems right now.
So what does that mean for this great institution of government that I know you serve so proudly in? I mean,
well, it means more stalemate, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think the impasse is not about to be broken until you have another cycle of elections.
Well, the next big cliff that you're all facing is a possible government shutdown in December over efforts to gut the Affordable Care Act and defund Planned Parenthood. Are you confident that Congress can come to an agreement and avoid a shutdown before the next deadline of December 11th?
I think we will, and I'll tell you, there are two reasons for it. One, I think Senator McConnell, the Republican majority leader, would suggest very clearly that Republicans would run the risk of being blamed for a government shutdown when he has a very tenuous majority in the United States Senate. And the second factor is that President Obama, I think, who has about 15 months or 16 months to go, I think for him, getting us through an agreement on budgeting makes a lot of sense. So there's room here between McConnell and President Obama to reach an accord on a spending plan for the next 2 years.
Okay, some optimism there. Last question. This week, the U.S. and 11 other countries agreed to terms of the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. Now the TPP heads to Congress for approval. Donald Trump calls it a terrible deal. Bernie Sanders said it would be disastrous. What's your stance on the TPP?
Well, I can tell you this. Donald Trump said it was going to be a terrible deal before he read it.
But, of course, there are critics that, well, let's say that have more authority than Donald Trump on these issues, who are really concerned about
more issue. More verbal authority than Donald Trump. That's a tough standard to meet. I think that, well, for example, this morning, I think that we would look at it and say we're disappointed, or I'm disappointed, with the standards for currency manipulation, which is a big issue. And in the next breath, you could say, well, we're probably happy about the tobacco regulations that have been inserted. So you're going to have to see what happens in terms of the balance that has been struck. But in the desire to get a deal, I think the U.S. Trade Representative had to make a lot of accommodations, as one does in the negotiations. And now we'll have a chance to sift and sort and hear certainly what the president has to say, and then hear what the opponents have to say.
But it sounds like your stance is a little bit wait and see here.
It's been wait and see, and some of these trade deals I think work and others don't, and I think that the jury is really out until you have a chance to sift and sort all of it.
All right. Well, that's Congressman Richard Neal. He represents the 1st District of Massachusetts. And Congressman, it's always a pleasure to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Anthony. Nice to be with you.
We have this quick update on a sad story we've been following this week. The U.S. Coast Guard says it will end the search for 33 missing crew members from the U.S. cargo ship Faro, which sank last week during Hurricane Joaquin.
The missing crew members include six New Englanders, two of them from Massachusetts, including Keith Griffin of Winthrop, and four others from Maine. The Coast Guard says it will keep searching into the evening, but end it at 7 p.m. tonight.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.